Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you with us here on a Wednesday afternoon. In studio with us this hour, Carlo Broussard, and our topic, truth and tolerance. Maybe you've been under the impression, or you carry the impression, or someone has maybe burdened you with the impression that with their impression that Christians are intolerant for saying that they have the truth, they have that they possess the truth. Is it intolerant to tell someone else, for example, that their beliefs are wrong? Are Christians guilty of hate speech when they call certain actions immoral? 888-318-7884 is our number. If you have a question about truth and tolerance, please give us a call. It can be philosophical truth or a truth revealed by God. 888-318-7884. Maybe you're a skeptic who doesn't think we can know absolute truth, even if it does exist. You can call too. 888-31-TRUTH. Carlo Broussard, as I said, is our guest, and he's a staff apologist here at Catholic Answers, renowned public speaker. And also, he has this brand new book right here that we have on the desk, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Hi, Carlo.
Hey, Si.
How are you?
I'm doing well, brother. Doing better now that I'm on the air with you. Chatting with
that
you.
Usually does make things better.
All kinds of stuff, man.
Clears up. We get in front of a microphone and all the problems go away. Christians, intolerant. I actually hear that more and more, not less and less. I kind of thought that that might be a wave that would crest at a certain point, and maybe it still is yet to crest, but I feel like people are perfectly comfortable in a chat room here or in a comment show there or whatever, just saying, well, you know, Christians are intolerant, and we want a tolerant society. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, first we have to ask them, well, what do you mean by, you know, Christians being intolerant? And then they might say, well, you're intolerant for being critical of another person's belief, right? You're not accepting their belief as equal or valid to yours, right? And I think, or you're being intolerant for saying somebody's belief is wrong and that you have the truth. And I think, first of all, we have to first take a step back and ask the question, well, is intolerance in an absolute sense bad? I mean, is being intolerant of something wrong or unjust in and of itself? And I don't think we can say it is, because there are some just forms of intolerance. So, for example, we don't tolerate blind people driving. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But that's a just form of intolerance, right? Because in order to drive, well, you got to have the equipment of sight, mm-hmm. right? Otherwise, a lot of folks are going to get hurt, right? Including the blind person driving. We don't tolerate murder in our society and killing innocent people. We don't tolerate.
Well, for the most part, Carlo. We have this abortion thing.
Right. That's correct.
That's an unjust tolerance.
That is an unjust tolerance, correct.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, putting abortion off to the side just for the moment, most people that we're in dialogue with who would make this sort of claim would recognize I'm arguing according to their position.
Yeah.
Based upon what they accept to be a just form of intolerance. We do not tolerate people who go around killing innocent people, generally speaking.
Got it.
We do not tolerate slavery. We do not tolerate forms of discrimination based on race, right? Those are just forms of intolerance. And then, of course, there are unjust forms of intolerance.
Right.
So if you are not going to tolerate, if I'm not going to tolerate you eating in my restaurant because you voted for a particular president, right, and I kick you out, well, then that would be an unjust form of intolerance. I'm not tolerating your presence in my restaurant, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to tolerate you to be in my restaurant or wherever because of your ethnicity. That would be an unjust form of intolerance. So intolerance is there are some good forms of intolerance and some bad forms of intolerance. So now we come back to this question of saying, well, is it really bad and unjust to say that, well, you're being intolerant for not accepting somebody else's views, beliefs, or behavior that's simply different from yours?
Yeah.
Because that's normally how people will define intolerance, to be unaccepting of a person's belief, view, or behavior that differs from yours. But you see, the key word there is differ. If it's simply a different opinion,
right?
Well, then it may very well be in an unjust form of intolerance to not be accepting of another person's view or opinion simply because it's just a difference from mine.
Right.
But that's assuming that there is no objective truth and that everyone's view or belief is merely a taste or preference or opinion. Because if there is objective truth and your view or belief doesn't conform to reality and thus is not true,
right.
Well, then it would be just and right for me to not tolerate your belief as a part of a system of beliefs that I hold to be true. So I would say, no, that belief doesn't conform to reality. I cannot accept that belief because it doesn't conform to reality. Or I cannot accept or approve of that behavior because it contradicts or runs contrary to what's good for human beings and thus what's going to constitute human flourishing. So that would be a just form of intolerance. But of course, that presupposes that there is objective truth. So the fundamental question here that we have to first get right is there objective truth for us, for our judgments to conform to, right?
Yes.
And then we can ask the question, well, is this a just form of not accepting something, and is this an unjust form of not accepting something? You see?
Yeah, I see. Now, lots of people will say, "Well, I think we can establish, and maybe we'll even stipulate too that there is such a thing as objective truth." Because if you say there is no such thing as objective truth, then you just ask the question, "Well, is that true?" And if you say yes, that's true, then you've contradicted yourself. So, okay, so. But many people will say, especially they'll say nowadays, Carlo, they'll use modern science and they'll say, yeah, but even if we're surrounded by reality, we don't really have any access to it because all this is happening in our brain. Our senses pick it up, and you know, that picks up signals around us or from seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, all that, and then our brain is just creating a world in our mind. So who are you to say what's real and what's not real?
Right. Well, that assumes that we can't really trust our senses and putting us in contact with reality. So we would have to employ a philosophical defense of the trustworthiness of the senses. So we might have to ask, well, what is your reason for not trusting our senses and putting us in touch with real things? And they might say, well, sometimes our senses deceive us. So, for example, a stick in the water might look crooked, but when you take it out, it's straight. You were deceived,
right?
Well, actually, the senses weren't deceiving you. Your sight was presenting to you what it was perceiving, namely an apparent crooked stick, right?
Yeah.
But your error would lie not in the sensory perception, but in your judgment to say, oh, well, the stick is crooked.
I see.
But you realize that so the error would be in the judgment, not in the sense perception. The senses were indeed giving you what they were perceiving.
So I got to think critically about even what I'm seeing here.
That's right.
But I can think critically.
Amen. And then you would test, of course, you test whether or not the stick is crooked with another sense, namely the sense of touch. And then that informs your judgment. Oh, no, well, the sight saw it one way, but then I'm able to test that with another sensory perception with touch, and then make the judgment. No, of course, the stick is not crooked. It's not like it was crooked, then became crooked and changed. No, the stick was straight, and just because due to refraction, etc., that it looked crooked. So We would have, and I do this in my book and Prepare the Way in one of the chapters, Can We Trust Our Senses? And I walk through various, I critically walk through various reasons that skeptics might give to doubt our senses.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sort of take those obstacles down and refute those reasons. And then, of course, the skeptic would be left with trying to shoulder the burden of proof to give me reason why I should doubt my senses. And the reasons that they do give do not stand up to the scrutiny of reason. And so we can trust our senses in providing us with the material. Then, of course, we philosophically analyze our human operation, our human action of thinking, right, and what we call abstraction, where when the senses perceive certain things, our intellect is doing certain things, which we call abstraction, where it's sort of understanding the whatness of that thing. So I'm able to sort of abstract, to take out of the matter, so to speak, right, the form, what we call the form of the essence, the whatness, the nature,
yeah,
which is universal. So like chairness or treeness or dogness, which it's not restricted to that dog or this dog,
right,
but can apply to any dog whatsoever, right?
Right.
And that's what's unique about us as human beings, this idea that we're able to come to understand and know what we call universals, these abstract immaterial concepts,
yeah,
that are universal in nature and can apply to any dog, anywhere, anytime, or any tree, anywhere,
right,
at any time, rather than it being restricted to this or that tree, this or that dog. So that's what we call in philosophy the process of abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're able to use those concepts, right? We're able to make the second act of the mind and make judgments about reality,
mm-hmm,
right, based on using those concepts. And then we take those concepts, we put them together, and we reason in the third act of the mind, which is called argumentation. So all men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. And so that's called reasoning or argumentation.
It's amazing when you think about it.
It is. It is the fact that we can
– we just do it.
And everyone, and you cannot escape it,
yeah,
right?
You cannot
because
do it.
To the very attempt to deny this logical process of thinking and argumentation and reasoning presupposes the reality of reasoning, because you're making a conclusion it's not true based upon certain premises, which is reasoning.
Truth and tolerance is our topic today. Carlo Broussard is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. If you'd like to discuss truth and tolerance with us, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We have to take a quick break. Then we'll get to those callers that are stacking up right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Father Larry Richards.
You know, I'm from the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and both of my parents, both of them, were police officers. My father was a police officer, and my mother was a police officer. They always thought I'd be a cop, too, and in some ways I am, a spiritual cop. But we keep doing what we do, and we come from wherever we come from, it doesn't matter. Where God is calling us is what's most important.
Open Line with Father Larry Richards, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Truth and tolerance, our topic today with Carlo Broussard. Hey, don't forget our store-wide summer sale. We're offering a bonus now for our final week. I just found out about this. You enter the promo code SAVE, and you save an extra 10% off everything that's already discounted. And I guess this is the big grand finale. It's like the fireworks. This is the big grand finale of the summer sale, apparently. Almost all of our books, audio, DVDs, tracks, and digital products are on sale 10 to 25% off, some of them even more than that, including all of Carlo's books and DVDs. But now, if you put the promo code SAVE in at checkout, you save an extra 10% off the already discounted prices. Just go to shop.catholic.com. Many callers for you, Carlo. Shall we
go to the phones?
Let's give it a shot.
All right. Truth or tolerance, our topic. 888-31-TRUTH, our number. And we start with Benjamin in Indiana watching on YouTube. Benjamin, your question for Carlo.
Yes. Thank you guys for taking my call. My question is more on the truth side. I am a Protestant, okay. Married with three children. And I've been looking into really the last couple years of becoming Catholic.
Okay.
And I'm even going to be taking RCAA starting in August.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Fantastic. To continue to explore that.
Sure, sure.
My question, though, is in some of my research, I've come across some information about Sedevacantism or Sedevacantism.
Correct.
However you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And so my question is, as I seek this, my deep desire is to follow whatever it is the Lord is leading me to in terms of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be obedient to what he's leading me to.
Right.
How can I know, in some of the stuff I'm going through, how can I know, or what are some methods I can use to ensure the information I'm coming across is true and is accurate so that I'm not led astray or deceived?
Okay. All right. So for our listeners' sake, Benjamin, Sedevacantism is a position held by some that claim the Bishopric of Rome is vacant, so the chair of Peter is vacant. It has been vacant since the death of Pope Pius XII in 1958, so all subsequent popes were not valid popes. So that's, you know, the view of Sedevacantism. But I think, Benjamin, what is key for me and what helped me in my journey and in, you know, sort of my, I was never a non-Catholic, but as a Catholic growing in my faith and coming to understand, you know, Christ's promises to St. Peter and to the church. First of all, in Matthew 16:18, you know, we're looking at these documents as historical documents that, you know, Jesus really said this in history to this man named Peter. And he said that he would be the rock upon which he would build his church, right? And Jesus promised that the gates of hell would not prevail against his church. So if we take just that right off the bat and we compare that with the idea of the chair of St. Peter being vacant due to official erroneous teaching that has been implemented in the church and put forth by subsequent popes after Pope Pius XII, then it would seem hard to reconcile that promise of Christ in Matthew 16:18 with what Sedevacantists are asserting in what happened in reality. To assert that the church fell off the track, so to speak, and that the popes in official manner have taught things contrary to the official teaching of the Catholic Church since the dawn of Christianity, that would imply that the gates of hell have prevailed against the church. And so that would undermine the authority of Jesus and his divine promise to protect the church from the gates of hell. And then, of course, you have other passages in Scripture where Jesus tells the apostles that the Spirit of truth would be with them always and would lead them into the truth always. He promised to be with the apostles in Matthew 28:20, I will be with you always until the end of the age. And Benjamin, note that when Jesus says that, he wasn't speaking specifically to the apostles as individuals, because those apostles would eventually die, right? And so is Jesus' promise null and void? No, because the promise applies also to the successors to the apostles. So if Christ promises, Benjamin, to be with his church, and in particular those constituted officials that hold these official offices and ministries to teach God's church the truth of God's revelation, and Christ promises to be with that ministerial office until the end of the world, well, then we have good reason to conclude, to have faith in that promise that Christ would always protect his church when it comes to those official teachings about truth and faith and morals concerning what God has revealed to us. Now, granted, successors of St. Peter and popes can mess up in their teaching in non-definitive and official capacities. And that in no way takes away from the promise of Christ, because Christ is making a promise to protect his church and the purity of that truth when it comes to the official teaching of his church concerning God's revelation and what we are bound to believe for our salvation. So I think fundamentally it all boils down, Benjamin, to Christ's promises to protect his church to be with his church. And of course, St. Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 3, I think, verses 20 through 21, when he's referring to the church, he speaks of the church as existing until the end of the world, until the end of the age, existing for all generations, right? Well, that church that St. Paul speaks of as existing for all generations includes not only believers in Christ, but also the institutional offices that Christ established his church with, the governing officials, namely the office of Peter as the Bishop of Rome, his successors, and of course, the successors to the apostles, the bishops and presbyters. So that governing body of constituted officials is an essential part of the structure of the church that Jesus established. And so from that, we can conclude that for all generations, there will be a valid Bishop of Rome, the keeper of the keys, the rock of the church, that visible source of unity for Christians to be united in that truth. So it all boils down to the promise of Christ.
Okay, Benjamin?
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Because when I come across that information, I'll be honest, they would go down some pretty bad rabbit trails about prophecy and revelation and end of the time, end time stuff. And,
right.
I kept getting really bad stomach aches when I would read that stuff. Matter of fact, the night I found that stuff, I couldn't sleep well.
Right. Yeah. So, I totally understand that, Benjamin. Just always remember, brother, that we have the promise of Christ, right? And always remember, too, that this promise of Christ of the gift of infallibility, of protecting his church in truth concerning God's revelation, is to be distinguished from leaders of the church, in particular popes, in exercising their office in non-definitive ways. Remember, popes are not guaranteed the promise of perfect prudence, right? And being perfectly prudent in their decision-making, nor are they guaranteed to teach the truth in non-definitive manners and modes, whatever that may be. So if we can remember that, Benjamin, because a lot of times people will throw that in our face and say, oh, well, this pope was teaching heresy here and there. Well, if it was in a non-definitive manner, if he wasn't binding the universal church to believe it, well, then, yeah, we acknowledge that he is subject to error in that particular mode of teaching. So if you can remember that distinction, I think, at least it has for me, to help me that when I'm confronted with things like this, or bad popes and this pope said that and this pope said this, well, then I'm able to distinguish between, well, yeah, I mean, that's none, what's the conclusion? What's the implication of that? Nothing. In no way does it undermine the divine origin of that office and the authority invested in it.
Benjamin, thank you very, very much. I hope as you continue on your journey, you'll think about giving us a call again. We'd love to hear from you. 888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking truth and tolerance with Carlo. It's often the case, Carlo, that in our world, the word tolerance is used to quash any discussion of what's true and what's not true.
Right.
I think that's what the nub of what we're getting at is that you say, well, marriage can be anything that two people decide. And you say, I don't think that that's true. I don't think that's the case. Well, that's intolerant. Well, now the discussion is over.
That's right.
Is that your experience?
Yeah, it is. But I think it's important we try to point out to people, well, you're actually employing a double standard because why am I being intolerant for being critical of a particular position, belief, or behavior?
Right.
But yet you're not intolerant
right.
for being critical of my belief about that particular belief or behavior.
Right.
So you're being intolerant of my belief. So you're slapping the label of intolerance on me, but by your very own principle and how you're defining intolerance, you're just as guilty of it as I am.
Right.
So it's employing this double standard. But that brings up the question, okay, so really the question here is not about being intolerant or tolerant, as I mentioned earlier. The question is, what is the nature of this belief or behavior? Yeah. Is that belief true or false? And is this behavior good or bad, right? And since all human beings it's the first principle of practical reason. Do good, avoid evil, right?
Right.
Goodness is going to help us flourish. What is not good is not going to help us flourish. So those are the questions we have to be asking and settle first before we even begin asking any other questions and how we relate to those beliefs or behaviors.
Yeah. So, but what do you do when some? I mean, in a practical sense,
I see what you're saying.
You know, like you're having a conversation. Okay. Well, here's the truth. Actually, I disagree with you that that's true. Well, that's intolerance, and we society is moving on without you or something. Maybe I have no opening. Maybe I'd say, society will have to move on without me because I'm not moving. Or what do we do?
Right, right. Well, I mean, I think initially you can try because you already have a signal there that the individual is not really willing to engage in rational discourse. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
In weighing the evidence for and against the various positions. In fact, that's a form of bigotry right there, right? Because it's sort of invective argumentation based merely upon emotion rather than it's not being willing to hear the arguments of the opposing view.
Yeah.
It's just shutting it down, right?
Right.
So actually, that would be guilty of the bigotry that they often claim us of being. But if they're not willing to rationally have a discourse, well, then you just have to
move on.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Hate to move on, but I guess you got to do it sometimes. Carla Broussard is our guest. Our topic, truth and tolerance. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. And I know you've been waiting, some of you callers. We'll get to you right when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
With the 50th anniversary of the release of Humanae Vitae approaching, you can expect fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, 5 Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humanae Vitae. We asked 5 distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humanae Vitae from 5 perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and co-workers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
Are faith and science compatible? Are they friends or foes? Catholic Answers Magazine is tackling that question and others with our very special Faith and Science issue, delving deep into what is arguably one of the most debated topics of our day. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 818-487-2011 or going to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. We'll take an in-depth look at the Catholic view of evolution with Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. We'll review the most common misconceptions about how faith and science stand in opposition with Dr. Chris Kazor. And apologist Trent Horn will refute the skeptic's claim that something can come from nothing, plus so much more. Don't miss out on what will be a virtual handbook on one of the most important issues of our day. Call 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine. From Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
I'm Gloria Purvis with Jack Williams. Tomorrow, Tom Grenchick on Pro-Life Leadership, along with Marjorie Dannenfelser of the Susan B. Anthony List. Join us for Morning Glory, 7 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, Christian believer, are you arrogant for saying that you have the truth and others don't have the truth? Maybe even being like one of us Catholics saying that you have the fullness of the revelation, of God's revelation, and other people don't have it. Is that arrogant, Carlo, to talk like that?
No, it's not. First of all, the first thought I have with that is, well, if you're saying I'm arrogant for saying I have the fullness of truth, which would imply that some beliefs are wrong, you know,
mm-hmm.
Well, then you're actually making a truth claim and saying that you're right and have the truth that I'm wrong for believing other people are wrong.
Stop. It keeps going around like that.
That's right. Yeah, which according to that argument, you would be just as arrogant as I am, right?
Right.
But I mean, fundamentally, if we're talking about arrogance in sort of the bad way, right, where we sort of have a misperception of our good quality in a false perceived way, right? Where we over emphasize our goodness or our good qualities or something, and we're just kind of like boasting and vanity and stuff. It's not that in any way, because truth is reality, right? I mean, how can you say – because let's ask this fundamental question. What is truth? Truth, you know
– Oh, Pontius Pilate asked
right.
that very question.
Quies veritas, right? I think I said that right. Maybe my Latin is as bad as my pig Latin. Hopefully not.
Your Latin is nothing is as bad as your pig Latin, Carlo.
So what is truth? Well, truth is conformity of our acts of the mind, of our judgments with what is real.
Yeah.
You know, Sai, Sai is sitting before me right now, speaking in a microphone with me. Well, that judgment corresponds to what really is, right? Mm-hmm. So to make a truth claim, how can it be arrogant to say that something is the way it really is? I mean, would you rather me say something that doesn't conform with the way something really is and thus have a false judgment? Is that sort of the way we're supposed to go and operate as human beings and making false judgments all the time in order to avoid being arrogant? Of course not. We wouldn't be able to function as human beings.
Right.
Why? Because we're made for the truth. The only way that we can function appropriately as human beings, if we're acting in accord with what is real. That's the essence of sanity, as the late theologian Frank Sheed said. Sanity is to see what is real, what is there, and to live in accord with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing arrogant or prideful, unrighteous pride about that. That's simply being human, right?
Right, right.
And furthermore, living in accord with that reality and embracing the truth, right, is going to bring about human flourishing, human happiness. So it all boils down to flourishing as a human being, acting and behaving in ways that are consistent with what we are as human beings. So embracing the truth is the only thing that's going to make us humanly happy. And then, of course, Jesus has something to say about that as well, because in John 8:32, he said the truth, Jesus, the great philosopher that he was, being reason itself, right?
Right.
The truth will make you free. And whether that truth is natural truth that we come to know by the natural light of human reason,
yeah,
or supernatural truth, that truth that we come to know through God's revelation, ultimately,
yeah,
you know, of course, in the Old Testament through the prophets and then through his son, Jesus Christ, in the New Testament.
So you can, in fact, say you have the truth. I suppose the arrogant would be the person who says, I understand it all.
That's right, because that's a false perception,
yeah,
of one's status and intellectual capabilities.
Right.
And it's it doesn't conform to reality. But to hold to that, you know, I, Mr. Know-it-all, well, that's a lack of humility, right? It's a
right.
lack of acknowledging the truth about oneself.
Right.
So true humility, right, which is the opposite of arrogance, is to acknowledge what is true.
Right.
And say especially the truth about who we are and what we are.
Truth and tolerance is our topic. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. And we go now to Nick in Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM Guadalupe Radio. Nick, your question for Carlo.
Yeah, so I'm wondering with gender identity issues, transgender, gender dysphoria, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
One, intellectually, how can we speak to our belief as Catholics on that? But maybe even more importantly for me, like, how do we pastorally respond when questioned about that, knowing,
right,
you know, the person who's questioning us may themselves be struggling with this or have a close friend or family member?
Sure.
Both on the intellectual side, but also on the pastoral side, how can we approach that thought and conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question, Nick. And, you know, to be honest with you, brother, in my mind, the intellectual side and the pastoral side are one and the same in the sense that they converge. Because if I don't use the intellect and the intellectual approach, then I'm not being pastoral, because I would be undermining the truth and possibly leading them into something that's contrary to their human good, right? Now, granted, I do think there's something to be said in approaching it from the intellectual side But it, being conscious of the mode or the manner, and that's where the pastoral approach comes in, but in which we provide them with sort of the intellectual reasoning process of going through this. So in conversation, you might employ the line of reasoning that's often employed by many and saying, okay, well, let's try to assess what you're saying. What you're saying is that your biological sex as male or female doesn't match up with what you identify in your mind, like interiorly. So your identity interiorly is not compatible with what you are physically in your biological makeup. And then I think what we could do is we can try to, you know, just in a very natural, if they're willing to engage in this sort of conversation, right? And say, okay, well, let's think about that. Well, there are some people who would make the claim that interiorly their identity, their self, right, independent of their body, their self, they identify as disabled person, or they identify as an amputee. And their self-identity doesn't match with their biological makeup because they have all of their limbs or their body is fully functioning. And so they may very well go through certain procedures to try to have their body reconfigured in a way that would match what they interiorly identify as. So, for example, you have certain people out there that suffer from this body identity integrity disorder. And so if you can try to show the person that the line of reason, the way of thinking, parallels in these two circumstances, and hopefully that person you're talking to can sort of see the absurdity of a person who's totally able-bodied, but yet would go through surgical procedures to maim themselves in order to match what they interiorly think they are. And if you can see the absurdity of that in that circumstance, the absurdity of the line of reasoning, well, then you come back to the issue of transgenderism, and hopefully they might be able to see the absurdity in that line of reasoning and at least begin to see that, well, maybe this way of thinking is not quite correct, right? And of course, in that process, we want to be charitable. We want to be natural in our conversation. We want to be loving. We want them to feel love that, hey, look, you know, I would simply say, you're a brother of mine, you're a sister of mine. I love you as a fellow human being. And of course, if they believe in God or if they happen to believe in Jesus in some way or maybe have some sort of tradition of religion or Christianity, I would acknowledge that and work on that ground. You're a brother to me. You know, I love you. And try to express that, but try to call them and say, hey, look, you know, as human beings, the truth, rather than restricting us and limiting us, the truth is actually going to help us flourish as a human being. Now, granted, you might be experiencing this struggle, and I acknowledge that, right? In conversation, I would be expressing this. I acknowledge the struggle you probably go through day in and day out of looking at your body and thinking, oh, this is not me, right? Trust me, just ask my wife. I have a lot of struggles myself that I have to go through day in and day out. But there's hope in overcoming the struggle, or there's hope in actually in the midst of the struggle. And this, Nick, to be honest with you, is where I would put on my theologian hat as a Christian and say, hey, look, you know, if you're interested in a way of trying to cope with this stuff, I mean, I have a solution for it. I have an answer to help you, and his name is Jesus Christ. And then, therefore, we employ theology and the revelation of Christ about the truth and about happiness in him and about the graces of the sacraments, etc. So I think there's a point where you can start on the natural level, philosophically, trying to point out the incoherence of the ways of thinking embedded in transgenderism. And then when it comes to, you know, well, what's the next step? How do I get through this? That's where we can offer the solution of Christ and his church as a way of helping them to live, to get through this experience and ultimately experience joy. What do you think of that, Nick?
Yeah, that's helpful. And I'm also thinking about, like, for somebody ready to take that step, trying to integrate them into, like, the life of the church. And, you know, as we're talking about tolerance, like, Yeah, how, right. how what does that look like? You know,
sure.
thinking if I
sure.
brought somebody to my parish with me, like what the response would be from the other people sitting in the pews or
yeah.
around the table and such. So
sure,
yeah,
sure. Yeah,
about
yeah,
that as well.
Yeah, that is difficult, Nick. And I'll be honest with you, brother, I don't have the cookie cut answer to that. I mean, you have you're what you're doing is you're trying to balance these two things, right? You're trying to invite this person into a relationship with you and a relationship with Christ and his church, but that necessarily is going to involve that person changing their behavior, right? So once you point out the incoherence of the logic and the inappropriateness of their behavior, and then, of course, eventually, you know, you're going to lovingly extend an invitation to them to change their behavior. But that might not happen on the first try. That might not happen initially, right? But then at the same time, if you invite them to join you to go to Mass or whatever, that may very well, you know, cause scandal on behalf of others. But at the same time, Nick, you know, I think there's sometimes we have to be conscious of what messages we send to folks. But I think if people, the majority of people of goodwill, see you bringing in somebody who maybe is dressing as a man when they're a woman or dressing as a woman when he's a man, perhaps, and you're bringing him into church to experience what's going on, I think the majority of people of goodwill are going to look at you and say, hey, Nick's doing some evangelization here. And you might even talk to your pastor about that and say, hey, look, I'm trying to evangelize a person. I'd like for them to experience what we have here and what I'm offering him for help in his life. And maybe that might be of help. And the pastor may very well have some wisdom in how to go about introducing that person to a faith life. But eventually along that process, subtly but clearly, we want to be encouraging that person and calling that person to change his or her behavior. And you may very well say, hey, look, you might not be ready to come and check out what we got for you in Jesus' church, but when you are ready, right, let me know. And when you're ready to make that change in your lifestyle, I'll be here to help guide you along.
Nick, we'll have to leave it there and say thank you very much for that. We have, this is one of those days, Carlo. Everybody called later in the show. Now we're going to have to fight our way to get to them all. I do have to say this, though. You have an article in Catholic Answers Magazine, How Science is a Believer's Friend, right, coming up in the next issue. Is that you?
Yes. It's actually – I don't know if it's like a specific article. I think our editor, Tim Ryland, is kind of taking it in pieces and dispersing it throughout the entirety of the magazine, which is going to be kind of cool. So a
sprinkling of Carlo
throughout the
magazine. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, it was for Carlo on every page, right? So it's going to be sort of sprinkled throughout the magazine. But, I mean, in all, it constitutes an article. Yeah, just kind of looking at – I'm actually pulling from some of the stuff I learned when I worked with Father Robert Spitzer in the Magis Center what I learned from him and seeing how science although not proving God's existence, because science just simply can't do that given its methodology, it does give credence to theism. It at least sort of points in the direction, as opposed to giving credence and pointing in the direction of atheism. I think the evidence from contemporary science, particularly contemporary cosmology, points in the direction of theism and at least gives credence to it.
I got to get this Catholic Answers magazine.
Yeah, you ought to do that, Si.
I do get it, actually.
It's a great magazine.
And you can get it, too. You just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Right now, they're adding a free digital subscription when you subscribe for 1 or 2 years. Go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
And we need to pray for all our world leaders and all those who are in such danger. See, in a day and age where people are getting further away from God, you get further away from goodness. Only God is good. You remember what our Lord said one day? Why do you call me good? He said, only God is good. Only God.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic. Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This hour, we've got Carlo Broussard here with us. Next hour, Matt Frad will be here. Believe it or not, we're going to talk about Pascal's Wager. You're familiar with Pascal's Wager.
Yes, and Matt Frad is definitely the man to talk to about it. That dude is just rocking the house with Thomistic philosophy and all things philosophy and theology.
Pints with Aquinas, after
Pints
all.
With Aquinas, that's right. Did I mention to you that
you
I was
did
on?
It. Yeah.
Was that? I can't remember if that was on the air.
See, this is the problem when we do a pre-show.
More.
I shouldn't talk to you before the show at all because then neither of us can remember. Was that on the air? Or
that's
just,
right. Yeah.
I don't know, but
yeah.
I think you said it on
It was a pre-record. It won't be coming out and published until like a few weeks or so.
Uh-huh.
But we had a good time talking about the fourth way of Thomas Aquinas. We were totally geeking out, man. I tell you, I was like a kid in a candy shop.
Oh, my gosh. I've got to hear this. Okay. Well, I'll look forward to it.
Let's geek out
Aquinas.
On truth, right?
Yes. Amen, brother. Andrew in College Station listening on Catholic Radio there. You are up next with Carlo. Your question, Andrew.
Yes. I was wondering if Carlo could comment on Charles Saunders Pierce's teachings on just how little truth has to do with people believe. And if you're familiar with Charles Saunders Pierce, would you characterize him as anti-Catholic?
Okay, it's kind of glitchy there, Andrew. I didn't catch the name. You said Charles what?
Charles Pierce, was it?
Charles Saunders Pierce.
Charles Pierce.
He, American philosopher of language.
Okay.
Linguistic philosophy.
I'll be honest with you, Andrew. I haven't read anything about Charles. I haven't read any of the writings or the works of Charles Pierce. Now, concerning the specific issue, if I heard you correctly, you're saying what does truth have to do with belief or what does belief have to do with truth? It was kind of hard to hear your question there.
Yeah, that was a major premise of his, that what people actually believe has very, very little to do with whether or not it's true.
And that's actually correct, Andrew, because just because someone believes something, it doesn't necessarily follow that it's true, right? Because somebody can believe something and be totally wrong in that belief. For example, someone might think the earth is flat. That judgment does not match up or correspond with reality. And so therefore, we would say that's a false belief. So just because somebody believes something, it doesn't follow that it's true. We have to ask the question, Andrew, does a person's particular belief match up with what is real? And how do we determine what is real? How do we determine whether or not that judgment corresponds to reality? Well, we start with sensory experience, right? Some things can be verified through sensory experience. So that belief is true or false based on sensory experience and using science, etc. But some things can be judged true or false based upon philosophical inquiry. So, for example, the proposition God exists or the proposition God does not exist. Which one of these propositions is true or false? Well, we have to employ other tools besides science, such as philosophy, in order to determine whether these propositions match up with what we can know, intellectually speaking, about reality and what is possible to exist within reality. Do any of these propositions and what they entail contradict reason in any way, right? And these are the questions that we have to ask in this intellectual inquiry to try to find out if a person's particular belief matches with reality or not. And that is to say whether a person's particular belief is true or not. So the question is not, oh, this person believes it. The question is the belief true? Yeah, of course I know you believe that, right? Tell me something I don't already know. But yeah. The question is, does it match up with reality? Am I getting at what you're asking about, Andrew?
In a very superficial way.
He said in a very superficial way.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we only have a superficial ability to hear you right now, Andrew. I appreciate that. But we'll have to talk another time. Andrew, thank you so much for that call. Anonymous on YouTube, you are up next with Carlo.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
So I'm in the science field. And the big thing now is transgenderism.
Sure.
And, yeah, so it got to a point now where they separated sex and gender. Right. And my question is, how can I teach the biological truth about the differences between male and female at the same time stay tolerant to the people who identified as the opposite sex that they were born?
Right, right. Well, I think fundamentally, being that you are a teacher, there is some good work that's done out there simply from a scientific perspective, right? That scientific studies that affirm the fundamental differences between males and females, right? And a great resource for you, Annan, to equip yourself with some of the scientific studies out there, both, you know, for and in support of transgenderism, and then scientific studies that are offered to counter the positions of transgenderism, is Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. And Ryan Anderson, in that book, Annan,
Anonymous.
I was looking at the screen there. Anonymous. Ryan Anderson gives a plethora of footnotes and resources and references to various scientific studies that you can employ in your teaching in order to present it as, okay, here's the proposition, here's what's being claimed, here's the scientific evidence for it, here's the scientific evidence against it. And as a teacher, that is perfectly rational for you to do and allow for the students to make their own judgments on which side, you know, which camp they're going to pitch their tent in, right? So you're simply presenting the evidence. And then, of course, if as a teacher you can employ philosophical reasoning, right, in order to present, okay, here's the proposition, here's the claim, here's the conclusion. Here's the premises that the transgender movement are basing their conclusions on, and here's what the critics and from philosophy say in response to those premises, right? So by employing philosophy and science, you can simply, once you go through the material that Ryan Anderson presents in his book, and you sort of articulate it yourself, Anonymous, I think you'll find yourself in a position to be able to state the claims on whatever side, and then weigh the arguments and present the arguments for and against. And then, of course, you allow for your students to make their own judgments on which camp they're going to pitch their tent in. Now, of course, I totally understand that in some universities and some fields and some places, even if you present the contrary or the opposing arguments to the transgender movement, you're totally squashed and you're done, right?
Right.
So, Anonymous, I would encourage you to stand up for the truth, to present the full story, right? And realize that that may very well have negative consequences. And, of course, I can't tell you to do that, right? I mean, everyone has to discern in their own individual life circumstances what is the most prudent line of attack. We always have to stand up for the truth, but there's no definitive answer on how you do that, right? So in your particular circumstance, Anonymous, you may have to be as sly as a serpent and trying to get through and wade these waters in how you're going to present the full story of the opposing arguments philosophically and scientifically to the transgender movement. So that's just sort of a general sketch of approach that I can offer you. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll look at his Ryan Anderson book.
And yeah, When Harry Became Sally.
Learn more.
Yeah. Yeah, the fundamental thing, Anonymous, is just to equip yourself with as many arrows in the quiver that you could possibly equip yourself with, as much information from philosophy and science that you can equip yourself with in order to intelligently present that information in a way that rather than sort of suggesting to the students that you're pitching your tent in that camp. This is a practical approach, right? An evangelistic approach. Sometimes you have to be sly, right? In presenting the variety of options of course, and then letting the listeners make their own judgment. That's what we do in debates, right? You know, you present one side of the story, the other person presents the other side of the story, then the audience makes their own conclusion, right? And sort of as a teacher, that's kind of sometimes what you have to do.
Yes, right. Anonymous. So you have to do what's prudent, given your state and your family's. But there is a truth here.
Without compromise of the truth.
Right. We don't violate the truth, but we often have to be, what is it? Clever. Is it clever as serpents or foxes? I never know which.
Wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I might be manifesting my ignorance of biblical knowledge here.
I think you and I both are at the moment, but I sprung it on you as the clock is ticking down. Next hour, Matt Frad will be here. We're going to talk about Pascal's Wager with Matt Frad. And he comes with Carlo Broussard's recommendation. Carlo, thanks very much.
Thank you, Si. It was a pleasure.
Always have a good hour with you.
Thank you, brother.
Carlo's book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, is available right now at shop.catholic.com. And it's on sale, just like everything else. Well, almost everything else there on sale. 10, 25% off. And if you put in the promo code SAVE, get an extra 10% off when you check out. See you next hour with Matt Frad in just a few moments.